No matter if points are gained or points are lost, there will be much to discuss. For analysis regarding tonight's Winnipeg Jets game, here are Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve post-game show starts now.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Ezzy's kids' artwork, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets' 4-3 overtime victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets, the return of Patrick Laine, the return of Jack Roslovic, the return of Pascal Vincent. It wasn't necessarily the prettiest hockey game I've ever watched, Ezzy. It wasn't necessarily the most entertaining hockey game I've ever watched, Ezzy, but at least at the last few minutes, it was entertaining, and it'll give us more than enough to talk about as we get going with the Illegal Curve post-game show. Good to see you there, Big Daddy.
Yeah, you as well, Drew. I'm a little bit worried that you thought I was Dave there for a second, because I think I've got about 50 pounds on Dave there. So
I don't know if you saw the Twitter back and forth earlier today, but I tweeted at our buddy Rennie, Sean Reynolds, happy birthday to Ken Weeb, by the way. It is actually his birthday, his 47th birthday today. So happy birthday.
And Weber and Elton John Sir Elton John have the same birthday.
Ah, there you go. So I tweeted at Rennie earlier, and he responded and called me Dave, everyone's got Dave on their mind with it, with him not being around for this evening's show, and Dave off gallivanting around the world. So we'll see him back a little bit sometime in the next few days or next week or so. Hit or miss Dave Manuk status for the next little bit. So you and I can hold down the fort in the meantime, I think.
We'll be all right.
Yeah. You know, one of us will just have to do like a moose minute or something, you know, pretend we know what we follow the moose as closely as Dave M does. But I'm sure we're up to it. The Mandel moose minute has a very good ring to it.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if it's going to be as informative, but yeah, we can talk a little bit about the moose game. I'm not sure if it ended. I know they were up 3-2. Overtime. Oh, was it an overtime? Okay, there you go. I was going to say, I saw a clip of the Mikey Essiemont goal, and I knew they were up 3-2. So we know the Moose Wolves rivalry is.
They lost in overtime. Josh Levo scoring for the Chicago Wolves with 3 seconds to go in overtime. So there's your update on the Moose game. The Moose losing in overtime.
The Mandel Moose second is that what that was? We can't even get to a minute. It's just a couple of seconds there. But yeah, we know the rivalry between the Moose and the Wolves. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, there was no shortage of you know, storylines with, you know, Laine, Roslovic and Pascal Vincent coming back, and you know, they rolled. I thought it was kind of funny that they rolled all three into one for the tribute video. Like, they decided not to give them their individual videos, because that probably would have taken up about half of the game, right? But I mean, look, at Laine had a decent chance you know, in the third period, and Comrie made a save. I still can't believe I know the game just ended a few minutes ago, but I can't believe that game went to overtime. Like, wow, that, I mean, that score flattered Columbus, and I realized, you know, the shots were pretty even there. But I mean, this was a game in which, you know, the Jets could have easily had a couple more goals, and you know, we'll, I'm sure, get into the, you know, the penalty at the end there, because we were talking about it right before we came on air. I mean, that's just garbage. I mean, that just you can't like, the only reason Columbus ties the game up is because they get the power play there, and obviously have the extra attacker as well. So it's a 6-on-4, but that's just a horrible call. And, you know, there was a horrible call earlier in the game on Morrissey. I forget who it was on, but whoever it was, they got a tripping penalty or hooking penalty as well. So there were two bad calls on Josh Morrissey tonight.
Justin Danforth is the other one you're talking about.
There you go.
Where both Danforth and Morrissey were taken for simultaneous penalties, even though it really did look like only Morrissey was the one who actually did anything, had an infraction committed on him. It didn't appear that Morrissey did anything in that instance. He got called for holding, even though it looked like Danforth held him. And then Danforth got called for hooking, very odd sequence of events. I mean, it's all, I mean, you know, Josh Morrissey had a very eventful game for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. In addition to scoring, and we'll get into that, he had a hat trick of penalties, something that you don't usually associate with Josh Morrissey taking penalties. And, you know, certainly you would probably have some quibbles with at least two of those calls, particularly the one at the end of the game with, you know, 20 seconds to go, that one.
Well, it's just not that bad of a slash, right? And it's a total sell job. Like, it's a total dive.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like, so just everything about that sequence, it should have either been no penalty at all.
Yes. Or, let him play at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, you know, call Corrali on the dive, and Morrissey should not have been in the penalty box there.
Well, especially because it takes the winning goal. I mean, it takes the insurance goal off the board.
Exactly.
I mean, and it happens way behind the play. There's just no need for that's over officiating of the game at that point in time.
Do you remember, Drew, way back in the day?
Yeah.
When Alexei Kovalev was slashed, I want to say it was against Pittsburgh. The Nordiques. Was it Pittsburgh? You're right. It was Pittsburgh.
It was the playoffs. It
was the playoffs.
And he dropped glove and he dropped his stick and he shook out his arm. And he was barely touched.
Yeah. It kind of reminded you of that, right? Like, just, it was so obvious. Like, it's not like it was a gray area. Like, that was clearly embellishment.
Well, I mean, you know, Corrali, went down like he was absolutely taken out by sniper fire. I don't know, you know, neither of us were in the press box for tonight's game, but based on the way he went down, you'd think that there was somebody up in the press box who had some very good aim based on that reaction. I mean, and yet amazingly, he was able to play overtime for the Blue Jackets and actually, you know, had a golden opportunity to win it for the Blue Jackets, which really would have set the building on fire had that happened in that instance. Thoughts and prayers, of course, with Sean Corrali. Hopefully he's able to overcome that hardship and overcome that terrible injury and maintain the rest of his career moving forward. But look, it was a bit of a weird vibe, I thought, overall. You know, I've seen a lot of comments so far in the chat about the sort of the weird tribute videos. And I get it. You got three different players or three different people coming back to Winnipeg tonight. You have Pascal Vincent, who, you know, was a assistant coach for the Jets, was the longtime head coach for the Moose, was a guy that a lot of people thought, you know, was going to be the next coach of the Winnipeg Jets, was sort of a coach in waiting.
He still could be, I guess.
He still could be. It's absolutely not off the table. But when he left the Moose to become the assistant coach of the Blue Jackets this offseason, it definitely was a bit of an odd move from my perspective and still is. But he's coming back, and that's a guy who's certainly was a well-regarded person within the Jets organization, was well-regarded by so many players, you know, were developed under Pascal Vincent. So he comes back with, I'm going to call it, good vibes around him. Patrick Laine comes back, and, you know, Patrick Laine, you know, from my perspective at least, and I know there was a smattering of some booze, when he took the ice and when he was on the ice to start the game. I don't quite understand that, really. I thought that it would have been the cheers for Patrick Laine were going to be significant, and they were more cheers than not, so don't get me wrong here. But sort of, you know, there was a bit of a mixed reaction, which I thought
it was anticlimactic. Yeah. Really is kind of what you're getting at. It was almost kind of like incomplete, right? Like you were left wanting more.
Yeah,
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Pascal Vincent was with the Jets since day one, as opposed to, you know, Laine and Roslovic, who were drafted a year apart in 2015 and 16. So, yeah, I mean, I see a lot of people agreeing with you, Drew, in the chat about, you know, a lot of people saying it was weird, awkward,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. And I think True North, you know, does an excellent job in terms of the, you know, the game production and the tributes, and you know, maybe this one wasn't the best.
Well, especially because, you know, it was only, you know, last Friday. Right? Today's Friday. Last Friday when Derek Forbort comes back to town after playing one game, and he basically got more of a tribute because, you know, he was the only one to come back. It was just, you know, it was just an odd vibe because, you know, and maybe this is me reading too much into it. I still think there's some ruffled feathers regarding how everything went down between Line A and the Jets organization, and especially Roslovic and the Jets organization.
I was going to say more so Roslovic with the trade request, right? Well, like we know Roslovic actually formally requested a trade, whereas we're not really sure if Line A requested a trade, but we're pretty sure he did.
Yeah, but I mean, Roslovic's problem, you know, was more, at least from my understanding, was more with the coaching staff and with the organization
usage,
because of how usage and how he was deployed. And then the Line A issues were more internal to the dressing room, and I think that filters up to the internal to the organization. But Line A did so much more for the Jets and was such a crowd pleaser. Think about the, you know, some of the biggest memories of Winnipeg Jets 2.0 are as a result of Patrick Laine.
The five goal game,
the
hat tricks, the 44 goals in his second year.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the wins, you know, the game against Toronto where he gets the hat trick in overtime. I mean, there was just, it was almost weird sort of lumping the three together as if they were on equal footing. And I understand, I'm not criticizing, because I understand that, you know, you have three guys coming back, you can't honor each of them individually, but it was just sort of added to that awkward vibe, I would say, that permeated at least a lot of this game.
And I don't know, like, why couldn't you acknowledge them individually, right? You have three periods, like, do one of them in each period, like, start it off with Roslovic, and then maybe do, you know, Pascal, and then, you know, save the most popular Jet aside from, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, arguably, right?
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying, but the game also had a bit of a weird vibe, right? Like the first period was pretty pedantic for the Winnipeg Jets, to steal a good term from Family Guy, right? Yeah. Like they were outshot, and I mean it just wasn't a period in which you saw enough offense, and there wasn't a lot of urgency. And then obviously, you know, the second period, that's when the Jets turned it on. But it was one of those kind of weird games, like, you know, Columbus to me didn't look very good. Like, I always like watching Zach Werenski. You know, Drew, I've always been a big Zach Werenski fan. He's a really good defenseman. And obviously, you know, we saw him get on the scoreboard, and he looked pretty good in the, you know, 3-on-3 overtime as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Line A, you know, I didn't think was much of a factor. Danforth was probably actually one of their better forwards. And then, you know, you've got some skill there. I mean, like, In the third period, you know, Igor Chinnikov, there was a, you know, a turnover by Logan Stanley, and
he had another,
you know, Eric Comrie comes out and challenges, you know, Chinnikov and makes a really good save. But like, you know, I thought, you know, Comrie played well, but he wasn't really, you know, tested. It's not like he, you know, I think he ended up facing something like 30 shots, but he was just solid. He didn't have to be great. He just had to be, you know, good. And I didn't think, you know, any of the goals were necessarily his fault.
Yeah, you don't love the, I don't think you love the Brendan Gaunce goal, but that's not, I don't think that's, you know, it's not a horrific goal or anything. It's a terrible turnover. That's, if you want to say any.
Well, that's part just of it. The turnover, I have a bigger issue with that turnover. And Logan Stanley, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I think he's just struggling with his confidence. Like, you know, I like Stanley, you know, he's a good guy. We had him on at the beginning of the season. You know, I think he's a very well-liked guy. You know, he's still very young, you know, early on in his pro career. But, you know, this is a few games in a row now where he's turning the puck over, and he just, you know, he looks like a guy who's fighting it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if a guy like that is fighting it, and you have a guy like, you know, Ville Heinola sitting in the press box game after game after game after game, especially on a back-to-back situation, I don't see the harm in swapping them out just to let, you know, Stanley's brain sort of settle, let him watch the game from above, to maybe just sort of, you know, recalibrate himself. But
you might see that against Arizona, Drew.
I wouldn't expect it. I mean, I understand why you say it, and obviously there's looks like there's going to be a lineup change because of Jansen Harkin's injury in the course of the game, where, you know, he got his arm got twisted and really looked like it was twisted at a bad angle, and he came back briefly to try and play through it, but he couldn't. So
I was surprised that he came back. Like, it, you're right. It looked like he was coming back, and then, you know, good for him for coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like, you know, most likely he won't play Sunday.
I would agree with that. I'd be surprised if you saw him on Sunday, but time will obviously tell on that front. Let's get into the game recap. It's brought to you by Betway, one of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world. Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront. It's simple, fun, and safe to bet with Betway. Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. I hope you, as he bet on St. Peter's again, as they are off to the Elite Eight for all those who are March Madness fans.
Go
they
Peacocks. Continue.
They upset my Kentucky Wildcats last Thursday. They upset Murray State, also from Kentucky, as it happens last Saturday. And then today they upset Purdue of the Big Ten as that magical ride continues. And anybody who bet on St. Peter's, say on the money line, say somebody named Drew Mandel, would be laughing all the way to the bank tonight. So yay for me.
Well, yeah, no, I like that though, right? Because obviously, you know, with Laura being from Kentucky, I'm always going to root for Kentucky, even though that one year I was being an ass and I was going for Wichita State, even though I don't even know anything about college basketball. But you I mean, I like how I like how you're, you know, now putting some money down on the team that beat your team, because you might as well go with them, right? I mean, it's not like you care who wins.
No, I care if I can line my pocketbook. That's exactly where my priority is. And in this case, it worked out to my advantage. So let's get into it. The Jets open the scoring yet again. I think, what's this, the third or fourth straight game that they've opened the scoring? It's Dominic Toninato, his sixth of the year. Assist to Brendan Dillon and Zach Sanford. That's Zach Sanford's first point as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Toninato goes to the net. Good things happen when you go to the net. And Brendan Dillon takes a simple-looking shot, but he gets it through, and it sort of deflects off of Toninato. Toninato, you know, gets a deflection on whatever you want to call it. It's a goal for the Winnipeg Jets at the 7:14 mark and an early 1-0 lead.
And before I talk about that goal, I just want to, you know, we got some great comments tonight. You know, I don't know if it's because maybe we have some, you know, cocktails flowing or some bevies flowing. But first off, Earl James, my whole life has been pedantic. That just caught my attention because I agree. Same with me, Earl. And I also like that Rob Mahoney is telling us to get back to the hockey talk because nobody is listening to the Illegal Curve postgame show wanting us to be breaking down the St. Peter's Peacocks and March Madness, right? So I like that. Let's keep those comments coming. I love it. Friday night, let's do this. Yeah, you're right. Dominic Toninato, just a really nice tip, but just good work along the boards by Zach Sanford, right? Like he causes a little bit of a turnover, gets the puck back to Brendan Dillon. And we've been talking about, you know, when the Jets are struggling to score goals a bit, sometimes, you know, that's something that's going to, you know, open the floodgate, so to speak. So Rzlikins is, you know, he's upright. He's going the wrong way. Nice tip by Toninato, nicely placed point shot by Brendan Dillon. And yeah, I mean, that was just a well-executed goal. Nothing too fancy. Yeah. But I really like that work along the boards by Sanford.
Yeah, that's exactly what, you know, that's why you bring him in. You bring him in to have a board battle presence. You bring him in to, you know, just add some extra size and a little bit of extra grit to the Winnipeg Jets and add a little bit of extra depth to the team, especially now without Andrew Kopp and, you know, and Jansen Harkins leaving the game injured. So certainly what you want to see from that line, it's not going to be a pretty goal from that line for the most part, but it was an effective goal for them. And the Jets had the early 1-0 lead. Jets make it 2-0. This coming shorthanded, Kyle Connor, number 41 on the year now. He's getting closer and closer. He's now got 15 games to go to get another 9 goals and get to that 50 goal mark. He gets his 41st. Dominic Toninato gets a second point on the game. That's his first career multi-point game in the NHL. And moving Kyle Connor, whatever you want to say about the rest of this season or the rest of or what this year has been, because it certainly hasn't been a great one for the Winnipeg Jets. But moving Kyle Connor to a penalty killing role has been an absolute stroke of genius. He's now got 3 shorthanded goals. I can't count the number of shorthanded chances that he's had, but he's just putting up tremendous numbers in that role and really having only played in that role for what? Half the year, probably less than half the games at this point, just showing you how effective he is, you know, as a penalty killer for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the Jets turning the puck over, but you know, Voracek turns the puck over in the neutral zone, trying to be too cute. I forget who he was trying to get the puck to, but you know, speaking of Toninato and that assist, like that was a little scoop play, but just so smart. And you know, I agree with you, Drew, in terms of, you know, Connor and how he has improved his overall game. Yeah. On the penalty kill and how that was really smart for the Jets to, you know, entrust him, because, you know, you've seen Lowry and Kopp obviously before he was traded to the Rangers, and Tony Natto has been killing penalties prior to coming over to Winnipeg. But, you know, just a really smart play by Tony Natto. We know that Connor, you know, can turn on the Jets, and then when he's on a breakaway, I mean, we know that, you know, his probability of scoring is very high, especially when he's on a heater like this. He's got 8 goals in his last 10 games here. So Connor scores his 41st, and Ovechkin also scored his 41st. But we have a good little scoring race, right? You've got Chris Kreider up there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Austin Matthews, he's a favorite to win it. So not only is Connor going for 50, but he's also going for the Rocket Richard trophy. So, yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, getting closer and closer. And what are there, 16 games left after tonight? So, I mean, he's got a really good chance at 50. He might even get more than 50.
Well, you know, from his perspective, get to 50 first, and then get more than that if it turns out that way. It's just, it goes to show you just what a shame it could very well be if he gets to 50 and the Winnipeg Jets don't end up making the playoffs, just wasting an incredible year from Kyle Connor.
Did you say Edmonton Oilers wasting Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid? Is that what you said, Drew? Oh no, sorry. Okay,
that's not what I said. They got to waste them. I can only put them in the same sentence when they waste 5 or 6 years of Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. This is only 1 year of Connor that they.
Okay, Edmonton's going to get a couple first overall picks. They'll be okay.
It's just part of the it's in their contract. The good times for the Jets, unfortunately, don't last that long. They last only 31 seconds. Adam Boqvist getting his 11th of the season on the power play, assist to Gustav Nyquist and Jack Roslovic. Roslovic providing a very nice screen here, and it's a point shot, and sometimes it's get it through rather than how hard you shoot it, and that was the case for Adam Boqvist on this goal, Izzy.
Yeah, and Boqvist was obviously the, you know, defenseman that came over in the Seth Jones trade, and I mean, we know that trade is not looking good right now for Chicago, right?
Wow. Chicago's looking good.
Yeah, fair enough. But again, this is a pretty straightforward goal. And you mentioned Roslovic provides the screen. And yeah, I mean, Columbus, even though, you know, they had some shots, they had some decent scoring chances. But, you know, on this one, you know, give them credit. You know, they execute a very, you know, rudimentary play on the power play. But, you know, I really like that Boqvist. Like, you know, mentioned Werenski earlier. You know, this Columbus team isn't going to make the playoffs this year. But, you know, you've got some foundational pieces on the back end with Werenski and Boqvist. So, again, got to give Jarmo Kekalainen a lot of credit for getting Boqvist as a return in that trade. They swapped first-round picks, and I think they got another draft pick, a second-rounder. I'd have to go back and look. But, you know, I thought Kekalainen did very well to get Boqvist in that deal. And I think the analytics community agrees with me.
Well, that's certainly matters the most, isn't it, Mr. Ginsburg?
It is.
There you go.
Don't piss off those analytics, you know, those analysts, Drew.
Well, like, you can't still, there aren't people still fighting about the analytics versus the eye test, are there?
I mean,
that fight has been put to bed for a long time now.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't follow, if you don't, you know, incorporate analytics into your, you know, hockey fandom, that's fine. But you also, that whole argument about, you know, analytics don't have a place in hockey. I mean, it's just ridiculous because they do.
Unless you're Steve Simmons. I think he's the only one who's still fighting that fight. And it's not a good fight at this point in time. But we digress on that front. 2-1 for the Jets after 40 minutes. And, you know, it's the Jets get outshot dramatically in that first period. 14-4 is what they're outshot. But they're on the right side of the ledger on the scoreboard. And I really didn't think, I mean, I know the shots were 14-4, but I didn't think the play was that one side. In fact, possession was pretty even in that first period. Speaking of analytics, you know, 52% to 47%, 53% to 47%. So I thought it was a relatively evenly played first period, except on the shots on goal factor, Ezzy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it was a pretty low event, boring first period, right? Like it kind of reminded you like yesterday's game, right? So, I mean, yeah, Columbus, you look at the shots in this particular case. Yeah, Columbus wasn't dominant. It was their best period, but it was definitely downhill from there because, you know, I thought, you know, the Brendan Gaunce goal that we'll get into next, that kind of, you know, galvanized the Jets in a way. I think they knew, okay, like, you know, it's time for us to wake up here. And they did. And even though, you know, you would like to have seen, you know, a few more goals and maybe an insurance goal in the third period, the second period and third period were definitely, you know, won by the Jets.
Yes, I would agree with that. Some stunning news from the world of music. Turd Ferguson just mentioned it in the comments. Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters has passed away. Word about the cause or anything. One of my favorite bands too. They, in fact, you know, Foo Fighters used to be our extra music for all the years when we were on the Dear Departed radio station. But you know,
they were also, I believe, scheduled to play in Winnipeg.
They are. I believe they're
in scheduled, September.
Yeah, coming up this year for sure. No details as I said, but absolutely tragic news. Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters. Announcement coming down about 11 minutes ago that he's passed away. So I wanted to mention that. That is absolutely awful. Yeah, everyone's favorite band, as Turd Ferguson says, true. They put on a great show. They're in it for the right reasons, as the cliche goes. But awkward segue back to the NHL, back to the game tonight. So, you know, puts it a little bit into perspective. The Blue Jackets tie the game at the 3:22 mark of the second period. Brendan Gaunce gets his fourth of the year, assist to Emil Bemström, who they could have made him up. I'm not familiar with him, to be perfectly honest, but that sort of tells you about how anonymous this Blue Jackets team has been a lot this season. But this is a bad one off of the stick of Logan Stanley. It's just, you know, you can see a guy who's just fighting the puck, and it just sort of, you know, there's no pressure on him. It's a simple routine play, and the puck just sort of rolls off of his stick and onto Gaunce's stick, and he just able to walk right into the high danger zone and fire it past Eric Comrie to tie the game at 2.
I'd like to hear you talk more about Emil Bemström, actually, Drew. So if you could just give me a scouting report on him, then I'll break down the goal. But obviously, I'm joking. But yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit a few minutes back. Like, you know, Logan Stanley, to me, like the thing that was so curious to me, puzzling about this goal, is that Stanley's not really under pressure, right? Like it's not like it's an aggressive forecheck. Like Stanley, you know, has some time, and it's kind of like when you whiff on a golf ball, right? Like I remember like when I was really learning how to golf, you know, in my teenage years, like the whole thing was like, keep your head down, don't look up. Cause you know, when you're starting to golf, you get a little excited.
That's what everybody does, is they look up.
Exactly. Right. And the thing is, like, you know, a good golfer like yourself, Drew, I know you never look up, right? You always focus on that ball.
I just got to look 250, 275 straight down the middle each and every time.
Exactly. But yeah, so it was just, he whiffs on it. There's nothing else that you can say. Like, he's not under a lot of pressure. He whiffs on it. And as you mentioned, it goes to Bemström, and you know, it just, you know, Brendan Gaunce, again, you mentioned this, like it's a shot in which, you know, Comrie comes out and he challenges, you know, and you know, he'd definitely like to have it back. I think it's funny when we say that, actually, because you know, goalies want to have every single goal that they let in back, right? But especially, you know, that one. But you know, it's just unfortunate because we talked about it, like, you know, Logan Stanley jumped up and you know, he missed the puck and it led to the game-winning goal in the last game, right? And for the Senators, and you know, it's unfortunate because he didn't have a great game again tonight. So you know, fortunately the Jets were able to rebound, but when Gaunce tied it up, you kind of started thinking like, oh, here we go again. Like, are the Jets going to blow this one and maybe, you know, give up a couple points to Columbus? So you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, Stanley's just got to have a little bit more, you know, poise, I think, a little bit more, you know, patience and just manage the puck better there.
I agree with that. The Jets are able to regain the lead before the end of the second period. It comes on a power play opportunity with Gustav Nyquist in the box. It's sort of the Jets had two power play opportunities in the second period. The first came with Patrick Laine in the box for tripping Mark Scheifele, and it was one of the Jets' best-looking power plays of recent memory. The puck was zipping around the ice constantly. The Blue Jackets were just, you know, scrambling. And it was a firing line. Morrissey, you know, had 1, 2, 3, 4 shots, I think, on that power play alone. And they just weren't able to beat Elvis Merzlikins. But it looked like you want a power play to look. It was fast. It was crisp. It was executed very well. Then the second power play coming at the 17:41 mark with Gustav Nyquist in the box, again, also had some similarities. It looked sharp. It looked fast. The puck was moving. And Morrissey had another couple of opportunities. And then finally, with about 12 seconds left in the power play and 31 seconds left to go in the period, it's Morrissey's 11th of the year as he assists to Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And, you know, he's getting the credit this year, but Josh Morrissey's shot has improved so dramatically over the last couple of years, for sure.
Yeah, he's got a great shot, and we've talked about it quite a bit. He worked on it this past offseason, and you're right, Drew, the Jets' first power play, even though they didn't score, you know, the first power play unit looked really dangerous, and Mike Johnson talked about this on the broadcast, right? Like, over a minute into the power play, you're thinking, okay, the Jets haven't scored yet. You're going to see the second unit out. And then Dave Lowry and the coaching staff decides to keep the first power play unit again out there. And it turned out to work. And you're right. Morrissey had a really good shot point blank, 10 or 15 seconds before his goal. And in this one, it was, you know, a little strange because Merzlikins gets a good piece of it.
Yes.
Like it's not like, you know, he just got a little bit of it. It's almost like Josh Morrissey shot that puck through his glove. It was so hard, right? But yeah, I really liked how that power play looked. And you can see that the first power play unit and the second power play unit, when they do get on the ice, but they've changed their look a little bit. Like you're starting to see, you know, like the puck being spread out along the boards a little bit wider and then just going back to the point, kind of like a power play you'd see 4 or 5 years ago from the Jets, right? And you'd see Buff hammer it, get some traffic in front of the net, maybe get a rebound. I like it. Like sometimes, again, it seems like a big cliche because it is, but a lot of times you hear hockey guys, coaches, players talk about keep the game simple, get pucks to the net, yeah, you know, get a second shot, get a rebound, you know, but sometimes that's how hockey works. Sometimes hockey isn't that complicated. And, you know, the Jets have no shortage of guys that can make those kind of small area plays, right? Well, where you'll see Wheeler down low or you'll see, you know, maybe it's Connor down low trying to get, you know, a nice little pass into the slot or a cross seam pass. But I like the simplicity of this power play, the last couple of power plays that the Jets have had. It was really well executed and, you know, just good to see Morrissey continue, you know, to have the hot hand.
Exactly. It was his 11th of the season. That's certainly a career high. Every goal he scores adds on to the career high because the career high before this year was 9, and now he's up to 11. So it's 3-2 for the Jets after 40 minutes, and it's another crucial third period for this team after what was the disaster of a third period last night. So which Jets team is going to come out in the third period? Which Jets team is going to show up? We know that the playoffs are a faint hope at this point in time, but you know, you still need to win the game to keep even that faint hope alive. And you know, for the most part, I thought the Jets played a pretty decent third period. There was the bizarre simultaneous penalties being handed out to Morrissey and Justin Danforth at the 3:11 mark of the third period, where it certainly looked, from my viewing, that Danforth held Morrissey, yet somehow Morrissey gets called for holding and Danforth gets called for hooking simultaneously. Don't ask me. I'm not
Morrissey
an official.
Didn't do anything. Like, you watch the replay. He just doesn't do anything. And that's why, you know, if you were watching that game live, you see him. He throws his hands up in the air. He goes into the box and he threw his gloves down. I forget if he took his helmet off. I think he might have. You know, he was just like, okay. Like, Morrissey's a smart hockey player. He doesn't take stupid penalties. Like, I guess the ref thought it was, yeah, but at least, you know, they got, at least it was a 4-on-4. And I was going to say, like, that 4-on-4, at one point I was like, can they put the Harlem Globetrotters music on? Kyle Connor was like, it was figure eights and it was cutting back and it was, you know, cutting in. And like, it was just incredible. You know, it was all Jets in the Blue Jacket zone. I don't even remember if there was a shot on goal resulted. I think there might have been a shot or two, but you know, the Jets were just skating so beautifully. So I really liked, like, I thought that was probably, you know, the best sequence of, mm-hmm, of that third period, because it wasn't a great third period for the Jets. I mean, like, they were just holding on for the win.
Yeah, I didn't think the Jets played a high-risk style, which I thought was appropriate. I thought they controlled a lot of the play. I know that the numbers don't bear that out in terms of possession and that the Blue Jackets possessed the puck more than the Jets did in that third period, but I thought the Jets were very effective at, you know, keeping it away from the high danger zones, which is something you don't often say. I mean, there were a couple of good opportunities. There was the breakaway you mentioned after Stanley got beat, that Eric Comrie came out really unaggressive.
Igor Chinnikov, former first rounder.
Right, an aggressive challenge by Comrie, but that's what he have to do. Come out, cut off the angles. That's a, you know, he looked like a goalie in that instance who was confident coming out to challenge.
Chinnikov had nowhere to shoot. It's like, you know, when you're playing minor hockey and you're a smaller player and there's a big kid in net who's like 6 feet or 6'1", right? And you have nowhere to shoot.
Well, that was a good play by Eric Comrie there to come out and make that, to cut off that angle. And then he had another quality save off of Patrick Laine, a blocker save, you know, that was probably Laine's, if it wasn't his best chance of the game, it was probably his second best chance.
I think he had a quiet game. I mean, it was unfortunate because I think there were a certain number of Jets fans that wanted to see that release and wanted him to score a goal and the Jets obviously win.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty low event game for 29.
Well, and you know, Columbus really wasn't able to set him up for anything on the power play. The couple power play opportunities that the Blue Jackets had, the Jets did a good job of stifling Patrick Laine. And then at 5-on-5, you know, a couple of opportunities. I think let me see how many shots he ended up with in the course of the game. He had 4 shots in the course of the game. So, you know, the blocker one was probably the best one. So, you know, Comrie came up big there. And the Jets looked like they were going to win in regulation by that 4-2 margin. You know, Blake Wheeler into the empty net. And then that's when the officiating rears its ugly head. Kelly Sutherland absolutely just gets baited into a penalty call on Josh Morrissey with, you know, 14 seconds to go in the game. The call happened with 20 seconds to go. The goal scored with 14 seconds to go. It's, you know, Morrissey doesn't like the hit that he took, justifiably, I thought. I thought it was a bad hit.
Yeah, but you know, I think in that particular case, yeah, the referee just, it would be interesting to hear or read about, you know, what Kelly Sutherland's, because we know after games, right, there's a supervisor and everything's reviewed, right? So these guys talk about the game, and you know that was something that they're going to talk about, because they know when after the game, and they these referees, they watch the games, I mean, they don't watch the entire game, but, you know, they'll watch what they need to watch in terms of infractions, right? And he'll know that that's a bad call, right? And so it was really curious, like he has to know in that particular case, not only was that slash not that egregious, he just has to identify that Corrali dove there. Like, that was so obvious. Watching that live, it was obvious. And on the replay, it's just more obvious.
Right, absolutely. And he dove and he got, and, you know, sometimes a ref, you know, misses the call in that instance, and he did. And don't for a second think that all the officials around the league won't now know that Sean Corrali embarrassed one of the officials with that call.
He could get fined. I bet you'll see him. My Ginsburg guarantee for the night is that Sean Corrali is fined for embellishment.
Well, I mean, that would not surprise me. And so, you know, and look, good for Corrali. He did what he needed to do. His team got into overtime largely because of that. So it's a combination of factors. Kelly Sutherland has to know better as the official. He has to know when what's a dive versus what's a call that needs to be made at that instant.
Maybe Kelly needs a new prescription. I'm not sure if he wears contacts or whatever, but maybe, you know, he needs to check his eyes. I don't know.
Whatever it might be, but don't, you know, Sean Corrali, he wants to do whatever it takes to win, and he did it, and they don't win the game, but they do get the extra point, or they get the point as a result, which is, you know, certainly an advantage for Columbus. Not ultimately that it's going to matter, they're not making the playoffs certainly, but it leads to Oliver Bjorkstrand's, his 23rd of the season, from Zach Werenski and Jakub Voracek with 14 seconds to go. So Morrissey takes the penalty, the empty net goal is pulled off the board. Morrissey goes to the box, his hat trick of penalties on the night. The Blue Jackets win the faceoff, and it's a shot and a clean rebound, and Bjorkstrand makes no mistake tying the game up at 3-all, and we're off to extra time, Ezzy.
Yeah, and I mentioned this, you know, earlier in the post-game show, like, I'm sure I wasn't the only one. I'm sure there are a lot of Jets fans that were watching that game thinking, like, what the hell? This game is going into overtime? Like, Columbus does not deserve this. So it didn't seem fair. But, we talked about, you know, there are a lot of point shots and rebounds here. And, you know, look, Comrie stops the first shot, and it's a little bit of a big rebound. but it's a 6-on-4 situation. So, you know, Columbus has got three guys in front of the net. So, I mean, we know that, you know, there just aren't enough defensemen to cover the forwards in front of the net there. So it's just, you know, it happened bang, bang so quickly, as Dennis likes to say. And again, I just, I still can't believe, you know, we watch hockey all the time and hockey is really unpredictable, but sometimes you're just, you're thinking to yourself, like, this should have been an easy Jets win, right? Like, and you mentioned it should have been 4-2. Okay, let's all go home. And then, you know, there's a controversy, and it's almost like sometimes the NHL officials want there to be chaos and controversy every single night. But yeah, I mean,
you know what the worst Columbus
forces overtime, Drew, but we know that, you know, what happens 20 seconds in.
What the worst part of it is, you never hear, not that I want the officials to get interviewed by the media after the game, but at least the NBA comes out with a, I don't know exactly what they call it. I think they call it the last 5-minute report or something, where, you know, they just basically explain what happened in the last, you know, few minutes of a game or whatever length of time it exactly is, and provide some context to the thinking, just a little more transparency. Whereas the
you're talking about on the commentary, right, Drew?
No, I'm talking about like after the game, they publish a report.
Oh, okay.
The NBA does.
NFL does that, right? Doesn't the NFL have someone specifically that will come in and talk about certain officiating calls?
Well, there might be a pool reporter who speaks to the officials after an NFL game, but I don't know that that always happens. I mean, okay. And you know, forgive me if I'm missing up the time frame a little bit, but the NHL just never has any transparency regarding their officiating. That's the problem that I usually have and I usually find, is that if they were a little more forthcoming and a little more transparent, then there wouldn't be the apoplectic nature of you know, every time there's a missed call. Like the NHL is saying, our officials are perfect, they never make any mistakes, when everybody knows that's not the case because they're humans. So just come out and talk about it and people will move on with their life.
I agree. I don't think there's, like, look at with social media. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I bring up social media is because, you know, you'll see people clip what happens and then it gets shared around. So everybody sees this stuff. Right. There's no secrets, right? And a lot of people know that, you know, the human error comes in to play with officials, just like it comes into play for players and coaches and everybody. We're human beings, right? So I agree with you. I think it would be nice to, you know, for even if it's, you know, the director of officiating, which I believe is still Stephen Walkham, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is ironic because he was one of the worst on-ice officials that I've ever seen in my life. And he's the guy in charge of officiating.
No, I think you're thinking of Tim Peel, Drew.
But, no, I'm not. But I'm thinking, there was a game of Jets 1.0, I'll vividly remember it, where Walkham, I think he might have been even a rookie official that year. And, you know, this is going way back, clearly. And he was so bad. And the game ended in overtime. The Jets lost in overtime because one of the Jets players, maybe he was the last guy back with the puck or something, and I can't remember exactly who they were playing, just came up and two-handed the Jets player and, like, shattered the guy's stick. And the guy, just, you know, the Jets player sort of dropped his stick because, you know, it was in pieces. And the guy who slashed him just took the puck, came in and scored. And I remember the entire arena. And this was after a litany of terrible calls. This wasn't just one bad call. This was a game filled with bad calls. And I'll always remember that it was Stephen Walkham was the official, because, you know, this was a younger, more emotional Drew Mandel was in attendance. And I think I probably wanted blood that night, you know, for the poor officiating that I was.
Hack his bone, right? That's what you were saying, Drew.
Other words that may have been four letters. Yeah. And
I was more of an Andy Van Helman guy myself. I think he was maybe the best referee of all time. But look at, I mean, these referees make bad calls, but I don't know if it's, you know, just the Jets or this year, or, you know, recency bias. I don't know what it is, Drew, but it seems like we've seen some pretty, pretty terrible calls, you know, over the last few weeks and months.
Let's get to the overtime goal. The Blue Jackets, 3-on-3. Look, I thought they were about to score. They had a golden opportunity, and I believe it was Kyle Connor who came back on the back check and was able to prevent Sean Corrali from tucking the puck into a wide open net after the Blue Jackets really got the initial possession off the faceoff. And, you know, Connor makes a great play, and feeds it up to Nikolaj Ehlers, who has a breakaway from the Jets' blue line in. And, you know, comes in, he sort of slowed down a little bit. And the defender who was trying to catch up on Columbus got, you know, closer than I expected him to. But Ehlers went five hole. And the entire arena exhaled and then cheered for a 4-3 Winnipeg Jets win.
Yeah, and you know what? Nice for Nikolaj Ehlers. We talked about it a few nights back. Was it the Chicago game that he had the penalty shot? I forget. There have been, you know, quite a few games. He had a penalty shot recently, and it was Boston, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
It was
Boston, because I was at that game. I should have remembered that. It was last week.
Where
it was
he went very slow on the approach. Yeah.
It was a very un-Ehlers-like penalty shot, I think, is what we were saying. And in this particular case, you're right, Drew. I mean, that's the thing that you have to love about overtime, is that you have a team, that gets a really good chance. I thought it was Werenski that had the chance, but maybe it was Corrali.
It might have been Werenski. I mean, I haven't, you know, what happens when the Jets score in overtime like that is, you know, I immediately have to send out the tweet saying, you know, Jets win post game, come join us. So I don't really get a chance to go deep into looking at the
replay. It was Voracek that got the, he drove into the zone and he got the puck. I think it was Werenski, because Werenski is number 8. So, but sure. Regardless, I mean, it was, you know, a decent chance for the Columbus Blue Jackets to score. Comrie makes a big save, and then, you know, give Kyle Connor credit, right? Like he just sees Nikolaj Ehlers, and it's not anything fancy. It's just a nice pass. And then obviously, you know, Werenski's, you know, trying to, you know, catch up to Ehlers, and he can't. Werenski's a beautiful skater. But we know that there aren't too many guys that can keep up with Ehlers, especially when he's got a few steps on you. So just nice for Ehlers to score that, that overtime winner, and just nice for the Jets to get the win, because they were absolutely robbed in the late stages of the third period. That game should have been over. Should have been 4-2, game over.
Here's an interesting quote from Josh Morrissey on the slashing penalty at the end of the game, or the one that led to the Blue Jackets tying goal. At the end of the day, I have to control my emotions there and not put my team down and take the goal off the board. That was a play I'd like to have back. We found a way in overtime, and the guy beside me, Nikolaj Ehlers, who was next to him on the dais, saved my butt. So there you go, Josh Morrissey, acknowledging the error of his ways, even though it was a bad call by the official as well. Morrissey can't be putting the official into the position to make that call. Dave, it's okay, Lowry,
Josh. I mean, Josh, I realize Josh has got to say that, but it was a bad call.
It was a bad call. I agree. Dave Lowry on Josh Morrissey's post-game comments. That shows you the type of person he is and the leadership he provides. He owns that moment, and that just shows the type of character and the player he is. He's been great for the Winnipeg Jets this year. Josh Morrissey has a bounce-back season for him. His 11th of the year, Nikolaj Ehlers gets the game-winning goal at the 21-second mark of overtime, his 20th. Kyle Connor with a two-point night. Connor, the first ever Winnipeg Jets 41-goal, 41-assist man, after being the first ever 40-goal, 40-assist man last night against Ottawa.
You might see a little 42-42 action against Arizona, or more likely 43-43. He'll probably get 4 points. By the way, we got a comment up there for Bad Mood Blake. Yeah. I was thinking that the entire time you were talking about that.
Great highlight.
An I remember fantastic back in highlight. The day, you know, because not all the Jets games were on TV. That was a home game, so that probably was on TV. But I remember listening to that on the radio on CJOB. I don't know what year that was. I feel like I was like maybe 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that.
Probably, I think you're older than that. I mean, I bet you that was 94.
Well, the Jets left when I was 15. You would have been, what, 32 at the time, Drew? But I think that was, I mean, it was somewhere in around the mid-90s, right? But I just remember listening to that on the radio, and it was one of those
93,
things where,
October 16th, 1993.
There you go, I was 11.
Yeah.
Little pudgy Ezra Ginsberg listening to the game on the radio. I probably had, you know, a little snack before bed, and I was listening to that game, right?
That might have something to do with the pudginess there, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's genetic, too, as well. There's a long line of, beefy Ginsberg men, right? So, but, I remember just thinking, like, what is going on? Because, like, it sounded like there was no way that goal was going to count, and then I remember seeing the highlight. And
the highlight
was like,
that makes it even better.
Like, how did that goal ever count? Yeah. It's classic. I think it ended up being on a Rock'em Sock'em video or something.
Absolutely,
like it was.
Absolutely, it was. And it's also on YouTube now. 1-0. It was a 0-0 game up to that point, and then it was 1-0 on a play that was clearly thrown into the net. The best part is they had video review, and they still screwed up the call that badly. I mean, you watch it today, and there's no question he throws it into the net. Yet in 1993, Lord knows what they were looking at, because that was probably goes down in history as one of the. I mean, in terms of ultimate, in terms of consequential, who knows how consequential it was. But in terms of just in the moment, worst calls in an NHL game, that one's probably got to be right up there.
I don't know if you remember, Drew, you might, but we've had so many guests on the show over the years, but we had Nelson Emerson on. He's, I think he's still at the Kings, director of player development.
Something like that.
Or he's in player development or scouting. And I remember we asked him about that goal. And I mean, this is years ago. This is probably 6 or 7 years ago now. I think it might have been when we had the NHL This Week show, but. I remember it was you or Richie that asked him about it, but I mean, he was pretty funny about it. But I have a random fact for you here. Nelson Emerson and my son Ruben share the exact same birthday, August 17th.
That is a
very Ruben was born in 2019. Nelson Emerson born 1967.
Well, thank you. That is undoubtedly a very random fact. And that wraps up the Betway game recap for tonight's 4-3 Jets victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets, with a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds. What are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the tough duck, hardest hitting comment. We'll come back with a preview of tomorrow morning. Morning's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay with us. More of the Drew and Ezzy Show. It's the Illegal Curve post-game show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the biggest acts and all the up-and-comers. They've all made their mark at Rumors Comedy Club, North America's longest-running independent comedy club. Rumors has kept Winnipeg laughing for over 25 years. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party, even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
He winds up. Oh, looks like Ezzy took that one right in the choppers.
A blistering fast puck hurts like HE double hockey sticks. That's why I let the pros at Linden Market Dental Center turn my yow into
wow.
Get your brilliant smile back with state-of-the-art restorative and cosmetic dentistry from real pros.
And remember, always wear a mouth guard.
Now that's solid on ice advice. Learn more at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Creating smiles for life.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos!
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Foley's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rollies and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Now, boys, finding parking on game day shouldn't take longer than the Minute Minute.
It shouldn't take longer than 1 minute?
Yeah, less than a minute? I spend at least 20 driving around to find street parking. Or if I'm in a rush to the game, I'll shovel out 20 at a parkade.
You're both doing it wrong. There's this app called GridPark. It lets you find and pre-book your parking spot on game days, and you can reserve your spot up to 1 month in advance. And guess how much you'll pay?
Tell me, Dave. You know I love a deal.
Ezzy, $5.
Come on, $5?
Yeah, and it's just 2 blocks from the arena.
The GridPark app?
Yep, spelled G-R-Y-D Park. And you know what else?
There's more?
Our listeners get their first park free with the code FIRSTPARK.
Wow, so they just download the GridPark app and pre-book their next game day spot for free?
Yeah, you got it, Ez. Promo code FIRSTPARK, only on the GridPark app.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
For three generations and over 80 years, Tough Duck has been making apparel that works and plays as hard as the people who wear it. From jackets to work boots and everything in between, Tough Duck's clothing can handle the harshest environments, even the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Work to live, live to play. Visit toughduck.com. 10:42 in the morning. Well, in the morning, in the evening, at night. I'm getting ahead of myself. It'll be 10:42 in the morning tomorrow morning.
I don't blame you, Drew. We're in the middle of, you know, 4 days straight of shows. I think we've got something like seven shows in 10 days. So
yeah,
I mean, it's 3 o'clock somewhere, right?
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Yeah, it'll be 9 a.m. tomorrow with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's currently 10:42 p.m. Ezzy, you got a Tough Duck hardest hitting comment for me. Who are we giving a toque out to, courtesy of our friends at Tough Duck?
Yeah, tonight's Tough Duck hardest hitting comment is going to go to Doug Thoroski. I know Doug is a frequent viewer of the IC post game show and IC hockey show. I like what he says here. PLD has been a beast for the Jets, 90%+ of the games, which is more consistent than 90% of the team. And, you know, even though Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't score tonight, I really liked his game. And, you know, we haven't really gotten into it. I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow morning with, you know, the new lines. Obviously, like, you know, Dubois, Connor, Wheeler, that's not a line, you know, that we've seen a ton. But, you know, I liked his game a lot. So I like that comment from Doug. I was just trying to pull up his stat line here. He ended up with 4 shots on net, 21 minutes and 42 seconds of total ice time, 3 minutes and 48 seconds on the power play. We talked about how he didn't, you know, get any goals or assists, but he was, you know, his regular, you know, self, you know, throwing his weight a little bit around. And, you know, Dubois and Connor, we know that they create time and space for each other, so they continue to play really well, and they're going to need them. I mean, the Jets, even though they're 3 points back of the Stars, we know, you know, their chances of making the playoffs are still slim with the Stars having those three games in hand. So the Jets are going to need, you know, Dubois, Connor, you know, Wheeler, Scheifele, Ehlers. They're going to need these guys to continue to play well. So Doug, send me an email, Ezra@illegalcurve.com. Send me your mailing address. You can also slide into my DMs at ICSEG.
You may not want to say that. Ship out a toque to you. Your wife, Naomi, is in the chat. So when you're saying to people, slide into your DMs, you know, she might get a little bit upset about that. I don't want to cause any friction.
Hi, Naomi, by the way. She's out right now. She's having a little night out with one of her friends. So obviously she's on her phone right now. But I appreciate the fact that you know, she's watching right now. I know that she's maybe had a few cocktails tonight, so she's probably loving this.
She did say
that's the only way she can watch us, by the way, Drew, by drinking. I mean, if she's sober, she ain't watching us. But if she's had a couple martinis, she's good.
She did say there's some vodka waters poured down. So, you know, you can look forward to that coming home to you in no time flat there, Mr. Ginsburg. Congratulations to Doug, winner of tonight's Tough Duck hardest hitting comment for his comment that was up on the screen. Want to say a big thank you to all of our sponsors. They make this show. They make the Saturday show. They make the website a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Ezzy and I will be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to be joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're going to be joined by Craig Button of TSN. If you missed Craig Button's comments during the TSN trade deadline show about the Jets coaching staff,
I would call it more of a tirade, Drew.
Well, whatever, or you can call it a tirade, whatever you want to call it. They were very interesting comments. We'll play them for you on tomorrow's show. We'll talk about them, and then we'll talk to the man who uttered them himself, Craig Button, in the second hour of tomorrow's show. Until then, everybody go get a good night's rest. 4-3, the Jets victorious in overtime. 4-3, the Jets, the Moose dropping an overtime decision to the Chicago Wolves. We thank everybody so much for joining us. For Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck. And thanks for watching the Illegal Curve postgame show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.